Welcome to the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. Cure your craving. Stop in today or visit Zaxby's.com. This is the Oklahomans, Oklahoma State Football Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Unruh. Jacob, you're up in Stillwater with me today. We just finished talking to some players. Your first time venturing into Boone Pickens Stadium to visit with the guys. LD Brown put on a show for you on your first day, Jacob.
He did. First of all, Scott was like old times.
Oh, absolutely.
It was old times on the prep beat together. But LD put on, it was almost like an open mic night.
A little bit.
He had jokes about his teammates. He had stories about his teammates. I was thoroughly entertained. He brought up the talent show that I guess they recently had, and there was a magic show that bombed. He said his act was pretty good. And Israel Antoine apparently can do a great impression of a president.
Yeah. Barack Obama coming out of Israel Antoine, for those who know Izzy, not the most outspoken guy, a very quiet guy, and apparently his Barack Obama is spot on. He got a 30 out of 30 and won the talent show over LD Brown. I didn't catch who all was in with LD Brown, but they sang a Temptations song and were in full suits and sunglasses and everything. So
yeah, I didn't catch it, but he said that they designed the choreography and everything that day.
He did it all. He led the way. So multi-talented LD Brown. He also helped us out, broke a little bit of news for us, Jacob.
Yeah, we had no idea who exactly was going to be returning kicks, and apparently he and Chuba Hubbard are going to be out there returning kicks.
Both involved, he says. So, and he sounded very excited about it. You know, we've talked on this podcast, and I've written in the paper that Chuba Hubbard isn't expected to be involved in that. You know, the early practices when we were allowed in to watch a few minutes early on, they did the special teams period. Chuba Hubbard was always with the receivers, going through pass catching drills off the jugs gun with Casey Dunn. Hadn't been involved in any kickoff return. That's a big weapon to have back there. He was a guy who averaged over 22 yards per return last year, and it's always a debate when you've got your number one running back, and in this case your number one and your number two, yeah, that you're putting back there to take some punishment. It's a little bit of a risk, Jacob.
Yeah, I think it is interesting in that regard. You look at it and go, what if one of them gets hurt, or what if both of them get hurt?
Right.
You know, you got one get hurt on one kickoff, and later in the game the other one.
Yeah.
Maybe Mike Gundy pulls one. If one has has an issue, that he pulls the other one to kind of have a safety net there. I don't know, but what I thought was interesting was LD said that they begged their way on. I want to know what begging with a college coach is like. What do you bargain in this situation?
Yeah.
He said the next step is to try to figure out if they can return anything.
Yeah.
Right now, because I think they're being told if it goes over the goal line at all to let it go and for a touchback. But you know, he's a former track star, and I think he wants to kind of let loose.
He likes to show off that speed. That's for sure. He talked a little bit about the responsibilities of the number two back in this Oklahoma State offense, which became that role became a lot more prominent last year as they tried to get really they had all four guys when you factor in Justice Hill and J.D. King. They were trying to get all of those guys involved in the game and start doing some more things to get those guys on the field, often with two of them together. But LD knows that he's going to have a much more prominent role. I wrote about him earlier in the week. He's a guy that's been nagged by injuries, had just, you know, a high ankle sprain that would keep him out a few games, or a shoulder injury, whatever it might be, along the way that have kept him off the field at times. But really excited now for his redshirt junior year to get an opportunity to be an impact player. That would be helpful for the Cowboys because they need somebody good behind Chuba Hubbard. It would be great for us because talking to him is a blast.
Yeah, I might put a request in every time at this rate. If he's gonna put on a comedy show like that, then by all means he can talk to us as many times as we can possibly get him, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And he his story of the first time he met Tom Hutton, the Australian punter, and hearing his voice in the I think he said they were in an elevator. That was pure entertainment.
He turned to him and said, "Say that again."
Yeah,
that's classic, right?
And then he told him, "You must get all the girls," which is Not true, I assume. I don't know the details of Tom Hutton's marriage, but he is married. His wife is in Oklahoma, working at Oklahoma State now. So I assume that that's probably not true, that he gets all the girls.
Yeah, I was kind of
just the one.
I was kind of thinking that when he said that. I thought, wait a second. I thought he's married, but I don't have that information right in front of me.
Yep. So L.D. Brown says watch out for it in the first game. He and Chuba Hubbard deep returning kickoff. So that'll be something intriguing to keep an eye on. Got to visit with Matt Amendola. It got to be a heavy special teams day. We've reached that point in camp where a lot of the storylines have been covered, and those of us who are there all the time are looking for new angles. And Matt Amendola talked about, you know, building the relationship with his holder, who is Jake McClure. Both he and Tom Hutton worked in that spot, but it sounds like McClure is going to be the guy there. You know, building that relationship after a couple of years of having Zach Seiner as his holder has been a you know, an important factor for him. Amendola gets ragged on a little too hard, I think, by the fans sometimes. He's been a pretty reliable guy. He has a tendency to miss in bunches. That's been his difficulty. You know, you think back to the 2017 trip to Texas Tech when he hit the upright twice, the same upright twice from inside of 25 yards, and you know, some other moments that he had. But he had a string of 18 straight that he made between the end of 2017 and the start of 2018. So you know, those are some important things. And you talked to another guy that should be involved in some special teams action. We'll get to that right after this break. This is the Cowboy Chronicles presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles presented by Zaxby's. I am your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Unruh. As I mentioned before the break, you talked to a guy who got in on a little bit of special teams action, Jason Taylor, the Carl Albert product, Jason Taylor II. He played enough special teams to get some experience, but not enough to burn his redshirt year with the new rule. So three games for him last year on special teams duty at the end of the year. What did Jason have to say about that experience?
You know, he actually said it was very beneficial for him. He got to sit and watch for a good portion of that season and learn and work out, and as other classmates of his were playing the full time, and he got in there and said that this has been very beneficial for him. He's come into camp and been a lot more confident in himself, and he knows what to expect and what to do. He's going to see some time on the field at safety, I think, and obviously special teams too, and he said that he's better from all this. And I asked him, I said, are you in favor of this rule? You know, because I know it's pretty popular. And he said, yeah. He said, it's great. I've got that experience. I'm not coming in here having not having a clue of what's going on after just standing on the sideline for a year. And he said that actually a lot of the older guys wish that they could have done it too. And so it's, you know, that's fair.
You know, it'll be interesting to talk to Gundy if he has some different philosophies for using that new redshirt rule to get some more guys involved. They had some guys like Kenyon Williams, Sean Michael Flanagan, who they would use throughout the course of the year, sprinkle them in here and there on special teams and let them get involved. And once they got to four games, you know, they would shut them down for the year. So that will be an important factor, I think, for some of these young guys to get involved and get acclimated to game speed and just become more comfortable. You know, it seems like it's something you could even use for a guy that maybe can't contribute on special teams, but you know, for instance, Tyler Lacy might have been a guy that could have benefited from it at the defensive line, even if it was just a few snaps here and there, something to change things up for him. So it'll be very interesting to see how that rule is used differently for Gundy this year. So but Jason Taylor, a guy that you got to know really well through high school, it'll be exciting for some local folks to see him on the field.
Yeah, you know, obviously I covered him extensively at Carl Albert. I did a big, giant story, Friday Night Lights, on him and how his father was shot and killed when Jason was younger, and how that motivated him. His dad played at Langston was really well liked, and Jason picked up football because of his dad and developed into this elite player, and especially in high school. He's one of the best players I've covered. Got to really know him really well, and I asked him today, I said, what was it like in that first game? You know, you step on the field, do you look around? I mean, what goes through your mind? And he thought, man, this isn't Carl Albert anymore. And it kind of made me laugh. Like, yeah, stadium's a little bigger now, right? You know, right. And that's why this is good for him, that he's getting comfortable. He looks different. He sounds different when you talk with him. He's a little more talkative than he was in high school. He was kind of a quiet kid in high school at times, and he's put on some weight, you could tell, and he's just a little more comfortable in his shell.
Yeah, running some second team safety for what we had seen earlier in the year, I would expect to see him be a guy that can come in and provide some breaks here and there for a guy like Malcolm Rodriguez, somebody like that. So important role for him, I think, this year. All right, Jacob, we'll take one more break and come back with the weekly mailbag here on the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. We are back on the Cowboy Chronicles, presented by Zaxby's. I'm your host, Scott Wright, joined by Jacob Unruh. It is mailbag time. Jacob, fire away. What do we got? I know we got Justin batting leadoff for us today.
Justin's back. He's a regular. Justin asks, both Gundy and Whedon have recently commented about 2011 and how they think they could have beaten LSU. My question is, now that there is a four-team playoff, has anything really changed for OSU? Would a one-loss OSU conference champ team get the nod over a one-loss blue blood? He says no.
It's a really interesting question, and you know, there's so many other factors that could play in. You know, is it a year like 2011, where LSU and Alabama were both clearly 1-2 in every poll at the end of the year? You know, then you look at you know, in 2011, if there had been a four-team playoff, you know, Oklahoma State would have gotten in. Obviously, that was a BCS ranking system. It was different. It was different at the time. But you know, there were Virginia Tech was on the outside of the top four in those BCS rankings with only one loss. Houston was undefeated and was ranked sixth at the time. And then Boise State was hanging around at seventh with a loss. So you had a good collection of one-loss teams that would have been battling it out, you know, in the eyes of a committee, as opposed to the BCS system, which would have been interesting to see how that was viewed. I think in that group, I think Oklahoma State would have stood a good chance, because it probably comes down to Oklahoma State, Stanford, and Virginia Tech for the last two spots, and I think Oklahoma State had a strong enough resume at the time that they probably would have got in. You know, the interesting thing is that Gundy and Whedon always bring up, or well, Gundy has brought up beating LSU. Had there been a playoff, they would have actually had to beat Alabama, then LSU, because Oklahoma State would have been the 3 seed, Alabama the 2 at the time, and LSU was number 1. So they would have had to beat Alabama and LSU in back-to-back weeks to try to win that title. That would have been fascinating.
Woof on that. That would have, oof, man, that's a chore.
Yeah.
Good question. Good answer.
Absolutely.
This one comes from MK Ryan. I believe I'm saying that right. Scott, is there a lack of separation because both are doing well, or because neither is that great? And I believe he's talking about the quarterbacks.
Yeah, the quarterbacks here. I think that I tend to lean toward believing that both of these guys are pretty solid. I don't get a sense from the people that I've talked to about the quarterbacks. You don't get a sense of worry or concern about the level of play. They're just it's too tight of a race to call right now, and I think that's it's concerning, because they're splitting reps and taking time away from the other, whoever ends up being the starter. But it's just the situation that Oklahoma State is in right now, and that's going to make things difficult at times. So, a lot of people like to go back to the old saying that if you have two quarterbacks, you don't have one good one. I don't think that's the case. I think that they're both capable of winning games in this offense. I don't know that they can figure out which one is the guy right now.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah. I really do. I think they're just trying to figure it out, and there may not be separation yet.
Yeah.
And it's not one's worse than the other. Good answer. Good question. Now we've got OSU-aholic with a couple questions.
He came in strong once I he told me first on Twitter. He said, I could fill up the entire mailbag myself. And I said, fire away, and he did. So,
do you want all these questions?
Well, I tell you what, we talked a lot of defense in our last podcast. Jenny Carlson and I did. So let's try to stick to his offensive related or other non defensive questions.
He asked about the quarterbacks. We've already answered that. He asked, who is the surprise breakout wide receiver?
Now you talked to Tylan Wallace today. And I believe he was asked the same question, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was asked who he thinks is going to be the surprise receiver, and he said all three of the X's: Jordan McCray,
Patrick McCoffin,
and C.J. Moore. He said that all three of them have been really great when he's seen in practice, and that they're going to surprise a lot of people. Now, he didn't say who was leading the way to get the spot. He didn't let that out, but he said that position seems really strong in his mind, and those guys over there are doing really good things. And I know a lot of people are excited to see Jordan McCray, just to kind of see what he brings transferring in. And I know that's the guy you've been touting that you're really interested in seeing. And you know, Patrick McCoffin has played very little football at this point with his injuries. And C.J. Moore is a guy I saw at Union, a big, tall receiver. It's going to be really interesting to see who wins that battle.
It is, and it's going to be interesting to see how those three guys get used, because I think that that they're going to find a way to have all of them involved. Because a year from now, Jordan McCray is gone, and those other two guys are back, and you need to have those guys ready to go. You can't just throw McCray out there and let him run like they did with Tyron Johnson last year. Of course, they thought they were going to have Tyron Johnson back this year, but he decided to go pro early, so that threw a wrench in their plans. So the way that those guys are used, I think you're going to get to see all three of them have opportunities to make plays. What's he got next?
All right. We're sticking with the offense here. If Gleason has really put in a stamp on things, what can we expect to see as a Gleason quote-unquote thing?
More than one quarterback on the field at a time would be the first answer that I would come up with. If you Google Princeton three quarterbacks, you'll find some game footage of him actually putting three quarterbacks on the field at one time, one split out to the right, one split out to the left, and one behind the center. So he is not afraid to do some unique and crazy things. Obviously, that's on tape that people can go see that. So I'm sure that he's using using the tools that he has to come up with something else creative. But he's not afraid to go outside the box and do some wild stuff. If you're looking for something a little more tied to the scheme, I think that the quarterback run game is going to be a little more of a priority going forward. You've got Drew Brown is an intelligent and adequate runner. He knows when to use his feet. Spencer Sanders is a playmaker with his feet, and Brendan Costello, who is the redshirting freshman number three guy, is also able to run as well. So I think that's going to be the thing early on in Sean Gleason's tenure that begins to be more established from this Oklahoma State offense.
I guess we should start planning nicknames for it now, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We gotta figure out what kind of nicknames we're gonna give all of these different things that Gleason is doing.
All right. OSU-aholic has he says, okay, I lied, one more, but he's actually got two in this tweet. So start with: should OSU fans be concerned if they don't see blowouts of Oregon State and Tulsa, or just chalk it up to Gundy playing a conservative?
Oregon State, not necessarily. I think that is a game that it's a two touchdown spread. If it ends in that range, I think that's perfectly acceptable. Tulsa, I would say if Tulsa goes out and puts up enough points to keep up with OSU, that's a little scary. They're going to be better on offense, but they're not Big 12 caliber on offense. So you probably want to see a fairly lopsided game there. Just in my estimation. But at Oregon State, I think that's probably going to be a game that's not it's not salted away early. I don't think.
That's tough. It's a tough road trip on right. Friday night. You're still working through things to open the season.
Oregon State's still fired up about things. It's not like they're 2-6. They're gonna
It's like opening day in baseball.
Yeah, you exactly.
Know, everyone 0-0. Even the Rangers are World Series champion hopefuls at that point.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so there's optimism there. The last one from him. Does Texas and Austin define the season?
This I was fascinated by this question. I'm glad it's the last one. It's a good place to wrap up the show. It's a really good question, and I think I don't think it defines the season, because they can still lose that game and come back and be the third best team in the Big 12, which would be a successful season with where they're starting. But it definitely defines the trajectory of the season. If they go down there and play well, I think they come out of that game feeling a lot more confident. And, you know, a few weeks later when they're at Iowa State and in a game that could really, I think, probably more define the season than the Texas game. You know, maybe they're in a better situation to play well there. If they get blown out at Texas, you got to bounce back and try to get a team that still has a lot of question marks around it, back on track and going in the right direction at that point. So I won't go as far as to say it'll define the season, but I definitely think it has a heavy impact on the trajectory of the season and where they end up.
Good stuff.
All right, Jacob, that's going to wrap up your first Cowboy Chronicles. Was it all the excitement you could handle?
It was definitely all the excitement I could handle. Right. Just as much as talking about special teams today at the availability. It's so exciting.
You worked in a Rangers reference.
I did get it. People may not know I'm a huge Rangers fan my whole life. They stink, so I worked in a reference.
Yeah, you hit for the cycle in the Cowboy Chronicles cycle. All right. For Jacob Unruh, I am Scott Wright. Thank you very much for listening to the Cowboy Chronicles presented by Zaxby's. Cure your cravings, stop in today, or visit Zaxby's.com.